Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us tonight. This is the Quila City Council Committee of Finance and Governance. My name is Zach Edan. I'm the chair, and I have my two colleagues, Councilmember Kathy Hogarty and Councilmember Cynthia De Los Trinos Johnson. We have, I believe, five items tonight. First one is appointment of municipal court judge. And we'll forward that to 10 for a regular meeting. It says that it's the mayor here who will be speaking on this. Staff?
Councilmember, I'll go ahead and take care of it. If you could just give me 1 minute to pull it up, please.
Sounds
Sorry
good.
About that. And pulling up, of course. I'm having a laser feast issue here, so let me reload. I apologize.
No worries.
Do you want to go to the next item? That way I wouldn't waste your time.
No, no, we
That'd
can
be
do
okay.
that.
Okay. I apologize.
No problem, Rachel. We can do that. See, the next, so item 1B is for update and possible request for ARBA. The ARPA fund. I think you have the executive director of SCORE. Vicky, do you want to introduce the topic and then we can have the discussion?
Of course, and I hope you can hear me. I am having some hardware issues, so if I cut out, just please let me know and I'll flip over to my iPad. So Vicky Carlson, finance director. As part of our ongoing ARPA conversations, there was a request from SCORE, who is not a direct recipient of ARPA funds, that city owners may need to contribute to SCORE. And so tonight we have Devin Shrum. She is the executive director of SCORE. And she's just going to talk to you a little bit about SCORE in general, how the pandemic has affected SCORE, how they've addressed the financial issues, where our assistance can come into play to help ensure that SCORE is financially stable into the future. And then also touch a little bit on the equity lens on how she's approached all of this. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Ms. Shrum for her presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for making time for me tonight. It's become apparent that we need to revise our biennial budget for this year and next due to a loss of revenue. And I just want to remind you, I think I've spoken in front of this group before, but SCORE has worked really hard since the beginning of the pandemic to manage the jail responsibly. And that costs money. We voluntarily reduced the inmate population by half. We spent the money out of our operations budget to make sure that we had adequate education training, personal protective equipment, additional cleaning supplies, and equipment necessary to make sure that the jail stayed clean. We've made sure that we kept 24/7 medical coverage and that we were maintaining high custody operation standards. And in fact, in the last year, we've received accreditations from both the Washington Association of Sheriff and Police Chiefs and the National Commission on Correctional Healthcare. And then we continue to have a nationally recognized medications for opioid use disorder program here at SCORE. Another part of how we've managed money here at SCORE, and particularly with an equity lens, at the beginning of the pandemic, we made the decision to eliminate medical copays. So SCORE previously had some fairly high medical copays. So if somebody sought medical care, they paid a portion of that fee for that service. So it's been completely eliminated. We did not want money to be a barrier to access to care. We also removed outstanding debt for the inmate population and former inmates. And for several years, SCORE has carried about $200,000 worth of debt from year to year on items that inmates may have purchased while they were here at SCORE. And the way that this could impact them is they left. We didn't go to a collection agency or try to collect externally, but if they ever came back to our jail, and quite a few people did, their monies that they came in with could be seized to to offset that debt. So that practice has stopped. We waive that debt. And it actually, quite frankly, costs more to manage carrying that over year to year than it did to try and go after that. Let's see, we made sure that we had a vaccine program right away for staff and inmates. So any inmate that wants a COVID vaccine can get one here at the jail. And we also offer regularly flu, Hep A, Hep B vaccines. Not all jails do that. And then we expanded video court services, creating additional opportunities to manage their court commitments sooner rather than later. And we made video visitation free for the inmates and their families. And those were previous revenue generating programs, but we eliminated the costs associated with that during this pandemic and have the entirety of this emergency. We also saw additional revenue. And actually, over this biennium, we brought in more than $1.7 million in additional grants and through rate increases and implementing a booking fee. Those costs are passed on to the inmate population. That's through our housing contracts. One grant that I would highlight is a RIDE program that allows us to transport the releasing individual to their very first treatment of program in the community. And we've so far over this pandemic have given more than 900 people rides to their first appointments upon release. Additionally, SCORE over this biennium worked really hard to reduce expenses. So we reduced expenses. Our largest expense is staffing. We went from a staff of 160 to 121 at the end of this year. That means we're all working a little bit harder, a little bit more efficiently and leanly, but that also comes at a real cost to the people who's were employed here at SCORE in their communities, and there's a cost to that too. Let's see. I think those are kind of the highlights. Overall, the biggest thing we did was really look at 2022. We take very seriously our commitment to not hit you year after year for cost increase, and in fact, prior to the pandemic, we've only reduced costs for the owner cities here at SCORE. But because of the pandemic, because of the impact to our revenue, because of the fundamental change of operations, we've realized a loss last year and are anticipating one at the end of this year. And I do believe that next year we could pull out of this, but I don't want to guess at this point. So we've reset our baseline to where we are today. And, you know, in a perfect world, we're having a different conversation, and this has changed by mid-year next year. But the reality is today we're predicting that we will also be in the red as a direct result of the pandemic. So like Vicki said, SCORE is not eligible to apply directly for ARPA dollars, but I think we've worked really hard to be very responsible with the budget and the funds that we've had here at SCORE. The obligation for the city of Tukwila over the biennium is approximately $152,000 that we'd be seeking from you. And that's across all owner cities. I know that was a lot. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No, thank you so much. Thanks for being here tonight. We appreciate you. Council members, questions, comments, I'll go with Council Member Hogarty first and then continue with us in a second.
Hi, Devin. Thank you for your presentation. I really appreciate it when you come to talk to us. I have, thank you for all you do too with the inmates, and I have a lot of confidence in your programs. $152,000, is that above and beyond what we give you regularly? I have a couple questions about finances. So that would be in addition to?
It would be, yeah. So over the biennium, we're having to adjust the total owner cost to $3.3 million. But your city actually is saving $36,000 in 2022 because last year we implemented a three-year averaging smoothing, and Vicki could speak to that far better than me, but it is $189,000 for 2021, You save money in 2022 to the tune of $36,000, which means that what we're actually asking for is $152,872 to balance our budget, which is now a biennial budget.
So what happens if you don't get the money, the ARPA money from cities?
Well, I mean, I don't know. We won't have a balanced budget, and we'll just have to, I guess, continue to dig out of that. I mean, right now we're projecting, because I reset the ADP to, need $3.3 million to really just manage all of the costs that we've done. I've reduced expenses over the biennium by $3 million, and I've shaved just about as much as I can. I can't take staffing much lower without that being a safety concern here at the jail. The population will increase. It will increase, but I just don't know when. And so rather than having to come back, that's why we reset the ADP to where it is today.
Thank you. Okay, those are...
Thank you, Kathy. Councilmember De La Cruz Johnson.
Again, thank you, Devin, for coming to present to us today. We really appreciate just being able to, hear from you and ask you the questions that we have. Can you help me understand why, where the loss in revenue comes from? And maybe I just don't understand fully how our jails are funded. I'm having a hard time because for our city, we know that the loss in revenue is directly tied to mainly the sales tax, because people weren't shopping or, going to movies. Our city was projecting a loss in revenue for that. But for the jails, what is the reason for the loss in revenue?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's actually better, and I should have started with how we're funded. SCORE is actually designed now to pretty much be self-sustaining because we have we offset all of your owner city costs, or the vast majority of your owner city costs, with outside housing contracts. And because we voluntarily and, again, appropriately needed to reduce the jail population, we effectively reduced all of those housing contracts so that you're essentially running the jail at half capacity, but that's the only way to run it safely with regard to COVID-19, which is why this is such a direct relationship to COVID-19. If I didn't take the step of reducing the jail, you would pay for it eventually in the form of litigation or worse, very sick people.
The funding is directly tied to how many people are being housed. Is that what
Sure.
you're saying?
Yes.
Where does that money come from? Who pays for the housing?
So, all of the owner cities pay a portion of their obligation to own the jail. So that's part of our funding. And the other part of it is housing contracts through other local governments. So those cities, and a prime example is the city of Linwood. They're in the process of demolishing their own jail and potentially building a new jail. But for right now, we're their main jail to bring people to. So all of those cities, all of those city councils, all of those city governments, they're paying for a service here at SCORE to house their people, which actually is the whole reason we haven't raised owner city rates for the last 3 years. So historically, SCORE has always raised owner city rates along with whatever the housing contract increase was. Well, we haven't had to do that for the last 3 years or pre-COVID because we brought in so much more business. We were smarter about the rates that we were charging. So we charge more for those beds that cost us more, the medical beds, the mental health beds, and we have a large state contract with the State Department of Corrections. So that essentially offsets the bigger expenses that you would experience as an owner.
Okay, thanks for helping me understand that. I work for the administrative office of the courts. I know one of the things that they're talking about just in terms of like criminal justice reform is actually wanting to continue to reduce the jail population. Like that's especially for pretrial, like that's a big movement that's happening across the state. I know that you've done a lot of good things in terms of like the programming that you're offering. I'm really interested in what you were doing with, what was it, the waiver of removing outstanding debt. Like these are really great things. And I'm just wondering, like, have you, knowing, and maybe you and I have different thoughts about like the whole movement to reduce jail populations, but if that were to happen, do you see SCORE sort of changing its services to serve people in the community that where they're not incarcerated, but they still come to SCORE to receive those services, and we as a city could pay for those services in the community, but it doesn't require somebody to be, you know, under supervision, I guess, or maybe there's a partnership with cities to provide some of these treatments? Because one of the things that we're experiencing is, you know, there isn't enough mental health services. There isn't enough like community health services. There isn't enough programming out in the community, but does one have to be incarcerated in order to receive that? And so it's just, I don't know if you've been thinking about that just in terms of evolving what the jail provides, but I just wanted to put that out there and ask you for your thoughts on it.
Well, I'm glad you did. You know, in a perfect world, there wouldn't be a need for me or a jail. We're not there yet, but we are at the point where if the world of misdemeanor confinement changes, then we need to be ready to change with that. And you have a lovely, beautiful building here, and we have to start thinking about other services, alternatives to confinement, day type services that don't necessarily require an overnight stay. And or do you look at some of the beds and the pods and the structures and make them available for another type of service that still requires a level of confinement but is treated differently, you know, like a medical bed or a mental health bed that has a confinement element to that. So there's a lot of opportunity here. We're having those conversations now. We're starting to think through what does this look like. I think we need, and this is what I attempt to do with my budget amendment, is to buy a little bit of time so that we can see how we stabilize with regard to COVID-19, what the world looks like. You have a purpose today, and, you know, will we fill that or not? I don't know, but we plan to have some bigger conversations come this spring about what that next stage looks like. What does 2023 look like? And there's a lot of people who are involved and are excited to be thinking about these things, myself included.
Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Okay. Thank you, Cynthia. I like some of the things you talked about and the equity, and obviously you really came prepared, and thank you. So just wanted to ask you that how many cities are the owner cities for the score? Which, like, is that 5, 6 or 200, 300?
There's six.
Okay. So each of them, you're asking 150?
No, our shortfall is projected to be $3.3 million. So the other cities have much larger share of that. It's based on, and again, Vicki could speak to this a little better than I, but it's based on your use of the jail and over a 3-year period. So the larger cities have a larger portion of those dollars. Tukwila actually has the lowest request in front of him.
Okay. How much are we spending our current biennial right now?
I want to say, and Vicki can correct me, that it's approximately a $70 million budget over the biennium, but please correct me, Vicki.
Yeah, that's pretty close. And I don't want to give incorrect information, so I can look up to see the amount as well as what our contribution is for 21 as well as 22. I can respond via email and get you that information.
Okay. And then the way we have, I guess, the way I understand it, it's two things. There's the owner's obligation, and then there's the housing contract. So I just wanted to understand both simultaneously. So with the housing contract is, you know, how many people that comes from your side and you pay for that. So when you respond to that, I just kind of want to see what that looks like and what's in our budget. And then owner's obligation, I think that's a fixed rate that you probably get that. So I think some of us would need to kind of understand that. I don't have any other questions, so this is kind of my comments, and I look forward to getting this additional information. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Bianchi, are you ready to go?
Okay. I apologize again to all three of you. So the judge's term is a four-year term appointed by the mayor, confirmed by the council, and through the ordinance process, the state does require that we go ahead and fix the judge's salary by ordinance. Now, it's interesting that they require that we fix it by ordinance because they also then set the salary. So as you can see on, let's see, it's page 7 of your packet, you can see the adopted 21 and 22 salary schedule for the judicial branch. So the a municipal court judge is the same level as a district court judge. So we're here before you today. As I believe we all agree, we have a great judge and a great court system, but we do need, if we're going to keep our great judge around, we need the council to pass an ordinance to have her around for another 4 years. And then with the salary schedule, she is, as an appointed judge, she is at 90%, so not a full FTE. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Well, no, thank you so much. Are there any comments, questions, Kathy? How about you, Cynthia? Any questions, comments?
No, I'm in support.
No questions. So we're supposed to forward this 10-4 regular meeting. That's next meeting. Is that yes? That's 3 yes. Thank you, Ms. Bianchi, for being here.
Appreciate it. Thank you all.
All right, so let's move on to item C, resolution authorizing the cancellation of outstanding general fund claims and payroll checks and municipal court checks. Cindy Wilkins?
And actually, I'm going to be taking this one as well as the next item. So this is an annual process, both of these are. So the first one is unclaimed property. It's required by the state. Anytime we have checks that are more than a year old that are unclaimed, we do have a requirement to report them to the state. We do due diligence trying to track down the owners of these checks to see if we can get them submitted to them. When we don't get a response to them, they go on the unclaimed property list. Just to point out, we do not remit the funds to the state. We actually retain them here. And if we manage to track somebody down or they find their name on the unclaimed property list, they can contact us and we can release the funds to them. Page 13 and 14 provides the details of the unclaimed property for this year. It's about $5,700. It's mostly witness fees, security deposit refunds, and refunds from utility accounts to surface water for people that have either closed their accounts, moved away, didn't leave forwarding addresses. Again, this is an annual process, and we're asking this to go to consent on October 4th.
All right. Are there any questions, comments? Kathy? Yes. Oh, go ahead, Kathy.
This is a yearly, something that we do yearly, and I'm fine with it.
Yep. That's correct. Council Member Delacina Johnson? Comments? Questions? All right, so I have no questions or comments. I'm in support of moving this forward to 10-4. I think my two council members are also not in here, so we'll move this to 10-4. Thank you, Vicky. Next one is item B, a resolution ordering the cancellation of past due accounts receivable.
Okay. So again, this is an annual process. We go through a process when we send out a billing. We will reach out to them. Basically, this is all the list of accounts receivables that have not been paid. What we're asking to do is remove them from the books. Just because we remove them from the books does not mean we still aren't actively collecting on them. They go to collections, and we do sometimes track these people down and get payment from them. But what this really does is it cleans up our balance sheet, our financial statements, so that we don't have revenue showing up there that in all likelihood we're not going to receive. Once we remove them from the books, if somebody does pay, it's just reported as new revenue. This year it's about $5,400 in write-offs that we need to have. The list of those write-offs is on page 21. The vast majority of them is false alarms. Usually those are for businesses that have closed out and they're gone. So odds of us tracking those down are pretty slim. There's a couple others, unfortunately, I can't quite read tipping my head, but from a damaged hydrant and a couple of others. Again, this is an annual process, and so we're asking this go to consent on October 4th.
Are there any questions, comments, council members? Okay. You're okay with moving this forward to 10-4? Okay. All right. That's 3-0, moving it to 10-4 consent agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vicky Carlson. The last item is item E, monthly general fund update. Tony Carlton, our deputy finance director. Take it away, Tony.
Thank you. Council members, hello. For the record, Tony Cullerton, deputy finance director. And as stated, I will be providing the general fund monthly report. This report goes through July 31 for information up through July 31. And so starting out, good news. Overall, total general fund department expenditures were reported at $32.6 million. And that's about $1.1 million under budget, or 3.3% coming in under budget. And all departments continue to operate below the allocated budgets with the exception of fire. Fire came in at around $712,000 over budget, or approximately 10%. And those variances, as previously reported, are primarily related to overtime and then the associated benefits. In the info memo dated September 27th, that included some additional information that breaks out the overtime variance by reimbursable and non-reimbursable overtime. But in short, the reimbursable overtime was 36%, and non-reimbursable overtime was 64% of the total variance. And then regarding other general fund departments, staff continues to monitor all departments closely. Those department budgets were already tight due to COVID and reduced revenues. And now inflation in general has increased for both supplies and services. And so that's an external threat to the city's budget. For example, insurance is currently exceeding their budget by $83,000. Or about 8% over the annual budget. Additionally, utilities are ticking up and have reached 83% of the budget as of July 31st, which is 58% of the year. So they're at 83% of the budget at 53% of the year. So that's something we're keeping an eye on. Now, council has already given consensus for a budget amendment of $200,000 for fire. And then during the August 16th community services and safety meeting, additional details were provided regarding the expected overtime budget usage. And so, in short, an additional budget amendment for fire is expected to be brought forth. Also, in the September 27th info memo included a summary of current budget amendments already brought to council, And the majority of those proposed budget amendments are revenue back and will be cost neutral to the general fund, so they'll have no negative impact on the general fund. And that concludes the monthly general fund report, and I will take any questions.
Thank you. Kathy, comments, questions? Cynthia, do you have any comments, questions?
Well, my comment is thank you. Tony.
Thank you.
My comment is also thank you, Tony, for the update. I don't have any additional questions. The report was very clear and easy to understand. So that's kudos to all of you who put it together.
Thank you.
I don't have any questions or comments. Thank you so much for presenting tonight. All right. That concludes our business agenda items. Are there any miscellaneous from my colleagues? Okay, cool.
You're in the most efficient meeting. I don't know how.
Yeah, she manages to do it.
I keep telling you guys, this is like the best committee, but no one believes me. You can have your dinner time before our council meetings. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody, tonight.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care.